Boom, boom.
Sweet. Nice, bro. Do you want a coffee, bro?
Yeah.
Your espresso, what do you have? Cappuccino?
Yeah, long black.
Long black? Yeah. Take a look, come have a look, bro.
Yeah.
Yo, how's it going? Catching up today with this absolute legend, Mark from Freedom Built. He's traveled all the way down from Canberra for this one. Can't thank you enough. Was real cool talking to him about how passionate he is about his business. He's got his partner involved. He just does design and build new builds. Couple key points taken away from that was, you know, it takes a year for him to get a job in production from the moment he meets the client, goes through council, goes through pricing, tender, and gets a job signed up. So biggest thing for him was talking about pipeline, how to fill up your pipeline and, you know, build a business that is sustainable and you've got a year's worth of work ahead of you. So take a listen on this podcast. If you're a local builder from Canberra, tag your company name below. We'll get in touch with you. We'd love to do a QS report for you. Take a listen. I love being busy, bro. I can't stand not doing stuff, eh?
Yeah. I felt a bit out of touch on my holidays. Like,
yeah.
We took 3 weeks. And yeah. It was probably the longest break we've had for a while. And
real.
I was just like, coming back to it, I was like, how do you do this? Like,
what's going on? What's a computer keypad again?
Yeah. I feel like your work fitness like gets towards the back end of the year as well.
It's
really good. And then.
Do you like, do you try and like set strict times where you do take some time off, or? Like, are you pretty flexible? Just depends how busy you are?
Yeah, I think, like, building industry is always, like, usually shutdown periods.
Yeah, man.
End of December.
Yeah.
To sort of mid-Jan. So I'll try and get away, like, for a day or two here and there, but yeah. I'll try and keep it pretty much safe for the end of the year. So.
Is it fair to say, because we obviously do all our QS stuff between, Aussie and NZ, but is it fair to say Aussie doesn't really open back up until fucking Australia Day's done?
Pretty
is
much.
That pretty much it? Yeah.
Which I saw a lot of guys' stories today just being like, I'm back.
Back so, at work, bro. Yeah.
I think a lot of people will sort of shadow come back. Like, they'll be monitoring it, but they'll give themselves that break to the public and everything to say, don't email me until Australia Day.
Australia Day. Bro, that's such a good break, man. I feel like in NZ, you can't get anything done between like the 15th and it's like the 15th to the 15th.
Yeah.
Kind of that's it. But it's more if your projects are based around council stuff and you need council sign-offs, that's a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
But apart from that, 100%. Like, you're kind of just working around subbies. So
Yeah.
So based in Canberra, how long have you been building in Canberra for?
Freedom's been open for 5 years now.
Yeah,
so
sweet.
5 years in February actually.
Nice.
I had a quick look at my Instagram and I was like, when was the first post I made? And I looked back and it was like February 2019. So
yeah. We had the podcast we got coming out this week, the guy Adam we did in New Zealand, he does like real high-end timber joinery, and I said to him, I was like, oh, your first Instagram post was September 2018. He's like, fuck, am I that old? Fuck, has 5 years gone that fast?
Yeah, 100%.
So. Yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah. So
been building longer, but in terms of just Freedom and the company,
I've
been going for 5 years. So yeah, I've been in the industry just over 10 years now, I think.
Yeah, sweet.
Just carpenter by trade, worked my way through the system.
Yeah,
just always had aspirations, I suppose, of running a business and sort of being able to dictate my own calls. And
yeah, bro, I feel like it's just like that freedom aspect, eh?
Yeah.
Being told what to do.
I feel like, though, there's a bit of a catch to that, like a misconception when you're like, I want to be able to work on my own terms. And I feel like when you're into
that's a lie. Because it's like you're on 7 days a week, man, and it's the first thing you think about, the last thing you think about every day. Yeah.
But, I think like, it'll separate you pretty quickly whether you want to do it or you don't want to do it. And I think sort of high achievers enjoy doing it. So
pressure and stress, bro, I think it's good for you, 100%.
Yeah.
So like, is it the standard, like in Australia, is the standard kind of model, like go to school, do you do a pre-trade course afterwards? Would you go and work for a builder? Like, is it changing or how does it go?
Yeah, so I found it actually quite difficult sort of getting to the stage of being a builder. So I think the standard would be starting your carpentry apprenticeship and then sort of working with either a contract carpenter or a builder and just trying to develop those skills. But we've got pretty strict guidelines on when you're able to apply to be a builder, which I'm sure NZ's probably the same.
Yeah.
But I think the minimum requirement now from having your trade behind you is then to have something like 4,000 hours signed off from a builder.
True. So would that just be like your practical completion?
Yeah.
And yep. what's the standard called over here? Like ours is NZ3604 and BCITO.
Yep.
What's the Aussie one?
So it's just a certificate. You need to obtain a certificate for in building and construction.
Yeah, cool.
And then from that, there's three different types of licenses you can get.
Yeah.
C class being just sort of low resi.
Yeah.
B class can sort of start to do the medium density townhouses and things like that.
Yeah.
And then A class is sort of sky rise buildings like we're in now.
How do these like developers that are building sky rises, who's got the license for those? Do they have the license or are they just hiring the builders with the license?
I think there's both. So
I'm fascinated by that.
So an A class license will be that's when you need to go to uni and do your 4 years in building and construction. Whereas with the C and B class, you can just gain those through B class needs to be diploma.
Okay.
And then C class just needs to be a cert four. So
I
got mine through finishing my trade and then I went into like night school pretty much.
Yeah, nice.
Couple of nights a week for a few hours.
Yeah, do all your theory stuff.
Do all the theory stuff.
And then
stuff.
Get your practice. Yeah. So while you were doing your building, that was allocating to your 4,000 hours?
So then, yeah, there's strict requirements. And I sort of came into it when they started to, I suppose, realize they were giving it to too many people too frequently.
Yeah,
so
man.
Mine was, there was a year cooling off period from once I finished my course to then I had to supply the hours from that course date.
I see. Because I feel like in New Zealand, the barrier to entry to like, do your own building work or handyman work is so low versus there's so many. So I reckon that's what drives our rate down.
Yeah.
Whereas in Aussie, the rates are way higher, but the barrier to entry is actually a bit harder, which I think is good because it's like, otherwise you just get flooded with fucking idiots, you know?
I think it's good, but the only thing that I struggle to get my head around is so for those 4,000 hours, you need a sign off from another builder.
Yes. Yeah, so
I feel like there's a big conflict of interest. Like,
who's signing them
off? Who's signing them off? And like sometimes people don't want to sign you off because you could one day be a competitor of theirs. So I found when I was a contractor and I had really good relationships with builders and I'd work for them for years and then I'd say, hey, can you sign this for me? I'm trying to do this and I'm trying to progress into this. And they said, I'm not doing that.
Oh, man.
And like that's when you have good relationships with people. So I feel like
that's hard,
It needs a little bit more tweaking.
Yeah.
Just to be like, obviously, yes, you have to weed out the guys that don't belong there and the guys that are inexperienced and don't deserve to have it. But for the guys that have done their trade and they've put in the time and
done
then they get
work.
Shut down from someone who's just willing not to sign it off.
Yeah.
I think there's a bit of a grey area with that.
Yeah, that's sure. And especially like you probably get away with it in Sydney more not so like competition, you can move to another suburb. But Canberra, would you consider it quite small? Everyone knows everyone?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
So going back, like when you were doing your apprenticeship, obviously your boss was signing your stuff off.
Yep.
Is he still working there now? Are you his competitor?
No. So my boss was actually, he was more of a contractor. So we worked for bigger townhouse sort of builders. That was the first path that I took. He's still doing that same thing. But I always just wanted to, you know, it is... Every trade knows that's probably going to listen to this. It's quite cutthroat working to builders.
Absolutely, man. The rates are, the money's not there.
And then it's just like finding the guys as well. Like it's the cost of like having direct employees or even getting subbies now. Like, and that those meter rates aren't changing a huge amount.
Nah, man. I think, the difference, obviously, I want to talk about the supply of contractors and obviously the money stuff, but the way I see it, like guys that are doing labor only, they're really only clipping the ticket on labor versus if you're full contract, you can clip the ticket on, you know, four or five different items and you're still putting a contingency on.
Yeah, that's right.
In Canberra, you were working for that builder and then how did you get your first job or how did you start Freedom? Like, because that's always a big question we get is, you know, what do you do? How do you get your first job? Or like, when do you know when going out on your own is good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So funnily enough, when I first started, I was subbing to, I first left my boss that I did my apprenticeship with.
Yeah.
And then I started subbing to one of my friends.
Okay, cool.
From the start, he put a lot of confidence in me being like, you don't need to be working for me. Like, I think you should be out doing your own thing.
So he pushed you into it.
Yeah. And then he pushed me in and said, while I was still under him, he said, I want you to get an apprentice and I'll start.
Mean shifting you more work.
Yeah. Shifting me more work and more responsibility and things like that. And then it literally was like a 6 month probably phase, and then it was like, yep, here's a few builders that I can't keep up with. It was just putting me straight onto them. So yeah.
So you were going from labor only to full contract?
Yeah. So yeah, I got a lot of respect for, his name was Jack, who helped me with that. And I was just straight in the deep end, straight out on my own. And
yep.
You kind of sink or swim, and then...
Bro, 100%, man. So I feel like you didn't really have to take the approach of so much looking for work or doing sales.
Yeah.
You were kind of just doing a good product for one guy.
Correct.
Word of mouth.
Yeah.
This guy seems to happen all the time. Too busy. Here's an opportunity.
And I didn't go down that marketing aspect for it until about 3 years ago. So
that's interesting.
My first 2 years was just purely word of mouth stuff. And all I thought was, if I do a good job for one guy, he's probably got a friend or something like that. And it's just going to continue from that, which it did.
Nice.
But I feel like you kind of get capped out to a stage there where it's like, where's the real development? And I was like, same thing with contracting. I was like, there's not a huge amount of money in this, and it's tough on the body. You've got to move quick.
To make money, bro.
So the plan was always to get into building.
Yeah.
But then it was just like, it was steps to put in place to how to get there. And then that's when I turned to a bit more coaching, down the business side of things. Cause at the end of the day, I scraped my way through school. I wanted to be a rugby player back then.
Yeah, you're a pretty big dude.
and then I was like, you don't learn like business while you're at school. And so going from a carpenter, that's one thing, but then actually learning the business side of things is a complete...
It's almost like, you know, they always go on about, oh, shortage of builders. I'm like, okay, there's probably not a shortage of really good builders, but there's a shortage of good businessmen builders.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
You don't get taught anything, man.
That's right. Like, and the one aspect that actually really annoyed me when I was doing my tech to become a builder was they go on about statistics of like, how long it takes people to fail and what they fail on. And I think in a year's course, we spent, I think, like two nights on finance.
And
that's like the biggest thing that we fail on. So it's just like, it's crazy to me that like, they're not
pushing enough on the
area. They're not giving you a chance, really.
The biggest failure. So when you were first started, like, what were your payment schedules with labor only? Because obviously money and cash flows can be anything. How were you figuring that out?
Depending on the size of the builder, to be honest. So the smaller resi guys I found were better. They were every fortnight, stretch it out to every month. But then we did a lot of stuff with townhouses for a while, and that stretched to 60 days, 30 to 60 days. And when their invoice day, say at the end of the month, and then you tick over to the first day of that month, you can't invoice that till the end of the month. So you're sometimes going 60 to 90 days.
And that's ruthless.
That was tough at the time.
Yeah, did you have periods where you were like, fuck, I haven't kept up with my invoicing and I'm out for 4 weeks? Or
Definitely, yeah. Like the good thing at the time was two of my tradesmen were my close mates.
Yeah.
So
it's a hard convo.
Yeah, combos would be like, hey boys, it's going to be a little bit delayed, but I promise you it'll be there next week.
And yeah, that's shit.
Yeah, like that was good for them. Like the guys, apprentices that worked directly for me on trades, like I was always able to continually get those, but I could stretch the subbies that I had at the time a little bit further with those things. So
Yeah, that's the one thing, man. Cash flow can just sink. And like obviously labor only is not too bad. You're just floating like labor rates and maybe fuel for a vehicle, but fuck, when you get into like subbies and materials, 20th of the month, and then if you're on, like, what do you guys do for GST stuff here? Are you 2 month GSTs?
Quarter. So
quarter?
Three, yeah.
So that's not too bad. But I mean, in New Zealand, 2 month, that can catch up with you. Like,
quickly.
It's, man, it can be a slippery slope, eh?
And that's the stuff you don't learn. Like, I think I'm grateful that I had a good accountant with me from the start to say, this, like, when your pay comes in, this is what you need to be putting aside.
And
teaching those early steps from the start, because...
What were they advising, 30, 35?
40, actually. 40? So, that was just like having a buffer and then having enough for tax, GST, and then, like just anything on a rainy day, which,
for sure.
has always been good.
How did you track all that? Are you good on Excel? Do you use spreadsheets or were you just very close with your accountant?
Yeah, so it was always through like Xero with us
And
just tracking costs.
It's a good software, right?
I've definitely become like one of my strong points is being very focused on the numbers.
So going from rugby jock to nerd. Nice.
And I swear a lot of that is just, I think it's a healthy thing to be a bit in a mindset of like scarcity.
Yeah.
As in like you need to be constantly looking at where things are going and what's coming in and what's in the future, because like quick stuff can happen quickly.
Yeah.
And if you're not seeing that, then it can get really bad. And
I
feel like I've had like employees for a while now, and I always feel bit of a what's the word, like I've got to do right by them, and I've got to be in front of this. So
yeah
that was why I've sort of been very close to that side of things and making sure we're making money and making sure I'm getting three quotes or making sure we're keeping the cost down. And
I think, man, I've definitely had periods where, and if I say every builder will say this, they've made a stack load of money, but when it's good, it's always, there's always going to be a downturn somewhere or a small side. But man, we joke about this heaps, but guys go and buy you big Ford Rangers raised up, snorkels, and I'm like, bro, 50 grand could do so much better.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yep.
I was thinking about that before I came here because, yeah, I was floating.
In your Ford Ranger. No, I'm joking.
But yeah, it's just like when guys start to, it's like there's a big adrenaline buzz when
you start,
you start to land them big jobs.
But yeah.
If you don't truly know like what your costs are, because then.
Or I what's suppose, profit. Like you get a 100K payment and you're like, man, you've only got 10K that's yours.
Yeah.
And then you've got to pay tax on that.
And then one of the things that we find a lot with clients when we enter quotes is we'll be $50,000-$100,000 less than us. And I'll always question and say, can you give some feedback on where we were more expensive and what areas? Sometimes, a lot of the time we find it's in the preliminaries, like in, have they actually accounted for project management, supervision or administration on that job? And that's where we'll always be over. And it's like, we've accounted for it, but this guy's coming cheaper. And then it's like, if he's just making enough money on it, who's paying for him to run that job?
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the hard thing, eh? And I want to ask you more about this, but when we get quotes come back and they're like, oh, you're too expensive, I always ask for a breakdown and be like, was it the labor or the materials? Like, where were we? But then it's tag outs and that are huge as well.
Yeah.
Like, if your quote's higher but there's no tags and they're taking a lower quote with 15 tags, it's like, do the math, man. You know?
What are you missing out on?
What's your kind of company process between, like, if you could go into it, like, new lead to first site visit to quote to how does your company, say for a new build, how do you step it out and how long does it take for you, roughly?
Yeah, so we offer design and construct.
Cool.
And currently how it sits is we don't have in-house design. We'll
sub it out.
Sub that out to who we think is necessary.
Yeah.
And I suppose a part of that process as well is we spend a good amount of time from the start with questionnaires and phone calls with the customers trying to actually understand them.
Yeah, see if they're your ideal client.
Yeah, I think when I first started, I went really wrong with how I'd approach that sales process. And
quoted everything for free.
Yeah, I'd go to a quote, I'd bring my tape measure. I'd just say, what do you want? Like, and I'd measure things up and I'll say, I'll have a quote to you in 3 days. But I've now realized, I'll make a point of it now, I won't bring a tape measure with me to a quote and I'll actually just try and understand the client and what they're after.
That's interesting, eh?
Yeah, and it's just, it's more about, and I think the other thing that I've realized is, it needs to, like, not every client's right for you. So if you can understand them quickly, I think of face value in a conversation, you'll gauge whether you want to work with them or not, and vice versa for them. So that first site inspection I use is a bit of a vetting process to just say, is this someone that we want to tie up $1 million with?
Yeah.
Is this someone like that we have a bad vibe or anything like that? So,
and spend 12 months in their back pocket all the time as well.
But yeah, going back to that sales process, it's more like we'll run ads and I can probably touch on marketing a bit later down the track. But yeah, once the inquiry comes to us, we've just got a form on our website.
How many questions is it on average?
It's about 6 to 10.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty in-depth, eh?
Yeah, so it first used to be a little bit more in-depth.
Yeah.
But then we've, sort of refined that a little bit.
That's just business 101, eh? Like, I feel like every year or every, 6 months, you're always refining stuff. So
that's right.
Did you notice more inquiries or less when you refined it from 10 to 6? Or more questions?
More inquiries, definitely.
Okay, that's good.
And I think, the first one we used to ask budget and everything like that.
Yeah.
But I think for people to be asking about budget that first time off can be a little bit off-putting.
Didn't want to disclose that up front. Yeah.
But in the same token, on our end, we kind of want to know that from the start, whether we can actually see it feasible or not.
Yeah.
But now, once the questionnaire's in, we'll sit on a call with them and then we'll ask a few more in-depth questions. And
do you, when you go through that sales process, do you give any indications of price ballparks verbally or email?
Yeah.
Like, do you do that?
So we get a mix, and sometimes it's really hard, and that's one of the harder things of design and construct when it's literally just an idea in someone's head.
Yep.
And you're having to try and picture what they're after and then try and give them a ballpark.
Yeah, it's tough.
We find it a little bit easier with when people already have plans that come to us, and we can give them that guide and ballparks. But without sort of really dialing into it, then like it's hard, and everyone wants that quote. Like,
I know
they want to compare it with a few other guys.
They want to know a number, eh? yeah.
And then that number they'll really like leverage from the very start, and it's like, oh, you said this, or you said that. So that's a tricky one for us, and a question we almost try and dodge a little bit. Like, we'll give them that range, obviously, because you have to start somewhere.
We've always we've always tried to give like rough square meter rates.
Yeah.
Square meter rates are really dangerous, I feel.
That's right.
People take them out of context. Yeah. But I'm always like, you know, if you want to go real budget, townhouse, nothing too fancy, 2.5 to 3.5.
Yeah.
If you're looking in, maybe design and building, correct me if I'm wrong here, maybe 4.5 up to 5.5, 6.
Correct. Yeah.
Luxury 6+ up to 10. Would that be pretty fair?
100%. Yeah.
And when you give those, do you know if like other builders are giving those out? Like, do they come back to you and say, oh, well, we had someone say 3,000 a square, you've said 4.5, what's the...
Yeah, like I feel like sometimes there is a bit of a divide of like what the information they actually give to us, because when they fill out these questionnaires, when we used to have the price in there, I don't feel like they're entirely honest from that first part, because sometimes people are maybe trying to get it a little bit cheaper or just test you to say, oh, what's he...
Yeah.
Will he try and compete here or how is it? So the best way of me mitigating that was based on previous projects we've done. Mm. I'll give them an indication of what that cost me.
Send them some plans.
And I feel like that's the easiest way to try and get around that and say, this is what this cost us.
Yep,
you can have a look at what was included and I can send you specs and everything like that.
Yeah.
But based on a 5-minute look at yours, it's too tricky for me to just be like, 5,000 a square meter.
I feel like there's no, well, there would be other industries, but like you buy this laptop, for example, it's like 2.5K. There's no, the only thing they can tack on is a warranty, you know?
Yeah.
But with building, it's like, I mean, bathrooms vary from $10,000 to $200,000.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, building's so painful. So tell us a little bit more about, sort of what you do. So you just do design, construct new builds. Do you do anything smaller, renovations, smaller stuff as well?
Yeah, so we do, predominantly knockdown rebuilds.
You do the full demo, full everything?
Yeah, everything from start to finish. And that's where, I suppose, why we kind of got into the design and construct, because at the very start, we had a lot of people come to us saying, we don't actually know where to start.
So
I feel like it's really powerful when you can get the builder from the start, and whether
do
it's
everything.
Not design with the builder, it's the builder will work collaboratively with the architect or building designer with that process. So our main source of income would be knockdown rebuilds and also extensions and renovations.
Yeah, cool.
We only try and work in the inner ring within Canberra. So we don't have, like, my passion is sort of building people's dream houses and in established areas where you can bring in the landscape with the actual house. I don't have a big passion with all of the newer suburbs where people are trying to cut costs and build for as low as they can. And also they're on top of each other. There's no plants or anything, like it's all just house. So we actually, we do get a fair few inquiries in those newer suburbs and
politely turn them down.
Yeah. And then enough. Like we've also got processes for that as well that I've learned along the way. Yeah. Where it's just like, actually, when someone, you say no to someone, it's also being able to provide them value still and pass them on to someone else who may be interested in that job.
Yeah, if you know someone that's good in that space, you can say, here's a referral for you.
That's right. Yeah. So, that's pretty much what we're doing at the moment and where our passion lies.
Yeah, cool.
And we're also trying to do our own developments on the site as well. So.
Oh, nice. Have you completed any successfully?
Yeah. We've completed one. Knockdown rebuild of custom
home.
Good. Which is on our website and stuff. And that was our first family home that we lived in for a while.
Nice.
And we sold that that exchange September last year. So that was our first one that really got the ball rolling and was like a really profitable job for us, which we were happy with.
Nice.
On the flip to that as well is we also had a development that didn't go so well.
I love talking about problems, man, because everyone's got them.
Yeah. So
you had one that went pear-shaped?
Had one that went pear-shaped. And
what
we didn't
stage?
We didn't even actually get to the build. So we purchased, and this is only pretty fresh as well, like we actually settled on both of them, I think, a week apart.
Oh, wow.
We purchased a block. We went through the design phase. The feasibilities worked for it at the time when we purchased it. And then we were just sort of waiting to sell our previous property to then pull the pin on it. And in that space, the last 12 months, you guys would be the same as here, like that market's dramatically changed and
chopped off.
Yeah. I was just watching that and it was really hard because I'm like, yep, we've purchased this, we're paying mortgage on it. We had tenants in there at the time, which helped offset that a little bit, but then interest rates started to go up and then there were so many questions. It was a tough time and like we spent 15 to 20,000 on the plans, but I was happy that I think in the 5 years that I've been in business now, and the mentors that have helped me along the time have really reinforced that there's no room for an ego in business.
100%.
So yeah, there was some tough conversations that I had to have with my partner. And then we kind of came to it and just said, look, the best thing for us to do right now is offload this.
Yeah.
And we offloaded it at a loss, like over $100,000.
Yeah, it's a big loss.
But it was just like, if we then had the payments on that for another year, then, you know what I mean, we'd be another $100,000
in loss. Could have been worse, yeah.
Yeah, I just had to remove the emotion from that and just say, we're better off taking a hit on this now and then recalibrating, waiting,
man.
And then going again with the right block in the right area. So as hard as that was and $100,000 things, I think I remember
I've had one, bro. 130, yeah. Huge, bro, But off that, best 3 years
after
that. It was... So you're probably going through that now. I don't know.
Now I'm just like, okay, like I was pretty down in the dumps for a little bit there, but then I was like, look what I did with this development. Like, look how well that went. Look at the things that I've learned and I know that won't happen again. And
your DD process moving forward on the next one is probably going to be twice as strict, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So your core business now still is obviously working direct for clients, correct?
Correct.
So what's your sort of like pipeline for this year, 24 months looking like at the moment? Like how many projects ahead are you kind of sitting?
Yeah, so we're doing about give or take at the time, just depending on when they start and finish, but we're taking on about 4 to 5 projects a year.
Okay, cool.
Which is pretty much capping us out for our builder's warranty insurance. So
I see.
It's not like we can take on any more as well. But at the moment, like we've had a fair bit of growth over the last 18 months where I've almost like 5x our sort of turnover for the year. So
that's exciting, eh?
There's definitely like a lot of learning things in that and you've got to put new people on that you can trust. And
yeah, man, that's like, and that takes not so much like a cost expenditure, but a experience expenditure because getting someone in a management position.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about like your internal company structure, how you run it? Like what's your day-to-day foreman, project manager, etc.?
Yeah, so obviously as a business owner, I play a lot of the hats.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I'm obviously the director and I look after like talking with clients and sales process and things like that. And then I'm also construction manager on site. We're running the jobs.
Yeah.
I've got a team of 5 carpenters.
Nice. Any apprentices? Or?
Yeah, a range of, I've got 2 tradesmen and 3 apprentices.
Nice, man, yeah.
And those guys have been with me for, quite a few years now. So it's a really tight-knit team.
Nice.
Which has, definitely helped me get to where I am.
It's hard to get, eh?
Yeah. And then the biggest one, the most valuable one, has been actually bringing my partner on full-time in the office as a project manager. So
was that a scary transition?
Quit your
job, come work for me?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Everyone is like, oh, what's she doing the books? But she's actually a project manager and she was working for like a billion-dollar company prior to starting with me. So
in construction?
In construction, yeah.
Was that like a tier one? Must be a tier one.
Tier one, yeah.
What was it? Are you allowed to say what they're called?
RPS.
RPS, haven't heard of them. Are they like bigger than Icon? Icon level or?
I would say so. Like they pretty much look after all the defense infrastructure around Australia.
So, huge company.
Big company and like she had a lot of experience and we always floated the idea around, but obviously there's that thing where it's like, we still need to have a relationship.
Business till 5 and then relationship after 5 p.m.
So it took me a long time to, and I was like, meanwhile, I'm on site every day, like struggling, like
working
like 70-hour weeks and what it just to make ends meet. Just because I was scared to make that decision. But best thing I've ever done.
Nice.
There's no one I think that'll care more than your partner with your business. And I suppose whatever we both put into it, get a direct out of it. And I think we've been able to navigate that sort of work-life balance quite well when it's like tools down or computers off, like we can switch off and then go do our thing. So
how does it work with you and your builders? Do you just have one foreman on each site with an apprentice and then one apprentice swaps around a team of 2? Or
Pretty much works like that. A lot of the time I actually try and keep them together. Like we're currently doing a dual occupancy where there's 2
2 units.
On the one block, and I find five's not a massive team.
No, it's not.
And sometimes people will say maybe if they're all on one side, it's overcrowded. But I feel like culturally and actually getting things done when they're all together, I feel like stuff's way more effective.
Yeah, cool, man.
So yeah, I typically try and keep them all together. And like I was saying, like they're a tight knit crew, and they all enjoy being around each other. And when they're all together, I feel like I've tested quite a few different ways. And
I was going to say, you're the only one that knows if splitting a team up works or keeping them together is better for the business.
So when I first would think about it, I'd be like, five guys doing frames or something. It's just like, oh, are we going to overcouple there? But then it's like, when they get it done in a day, then you're like, okay, cool.
Yeah, this is good. I can be like, sweet, man, we've allowed 200 hours for frames and we've done it in 150. So that's good.
Yeah.
Are you big on like labor back costing? How long stuff takes, like setting deadlines, targets? Do you use a project management software?
We're using Build-A-Trend. We've only pretty recently adapted that and done some training with an external company.
Yeah.
Which has been a big help. I did actually get it probably 18 months ago, and when I first jumped into it, I was like, it was a bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
Like, and it's quite a lot. Like, it's, I think over the year, it's about 7,000 Australian. So
if
you want to be using that to its full capacity, otherwise you feel like you're just wasting
coin.
Yeah. So we got some training on it, which has been massive, and it's really beneficial for me to actually know my true numbers now.
Yeah, man.
So every bill that comes through a job will go through Build-A-Trend, and then it's also got, for my direct employees, it's got time clocks.
Yep.
So they can put a time clock on every single thing they do per job. So there'll be one for frames, there'll be one for trusses, there'll be one for pre-sheet.
Sweet.
And I can literally cost, and then in the long term, that also helps me with quoting.
And know where you're making margin or where you need to beef up on items. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And I feel like that was one of the biggest things I was scared of when I started to grow, was I was like, geez, like there's a lot of money starting to come through now, and I want to make sure I know like that it's all sound. So Build-A-Trend's been a massive one for that.
Sweet.
And then it's also just got, really good scheduling tools. The training we did on it, this is how in depth it goes, and like I really recommend it. So our schedule will have 50 to 100 things through the schedule, and then for each item on the schedule, we'll have to-do notes for it. So say before we pour a slab, there'll be a checklist that we'll need to go through, similar to like an ITP.
Yeah, and that's what your foreman's checking on site?
Yeah, that's right. Cool. And then it just has that benefit to say, when you're teaching someone and you're going through it, you can say, hey, put your head into this program.
Yeah.
And it should be like fault proof. Like even though they can have experience in it, should be like nothing will get missed. So it's like take photos of where this and this is.
Exactly,
and,
man.
And then just tick and flick. So
did your boys get around that pretty good? They were all open to it.
Yeah,
100%. Training on them.
Yeah. And then it's got the other bonuses, which has been a good cultural thing, is it's got a thing called time clocks in it.
Yeah.
And the time clocks, they can actually sort of interact with the client a little bit. So where they finish, say they knock up a frame, and then they can take a photo of it and they post it into a portal that our client and we sit in. So
they get notifications?
They get notifications. And
do they see like the photos uploaded and stuff as well?
That's right, yeah.
That would be a dopamine hit for them.
Yeah.
So they're sitting at work and they get that's cool.
Because I think one of the, from talking to a lot of people that haven't built with me, but that have built previously, one of the biggest fears they had is like not knowing what's going on at any stage. So
I feel like people don't do enough of that.
It's like if you have a fortnightly site visit and then you post daily logs every now and then just to show, even if it's something like minuscule, like hey, I built this bulkhead today, like and it's just like, oh cool, like it's bringing them in on that journey a little bit more than
I think that's important, like the emotional side of it. I haven't spent $1 million on a house yet, but I could imagine if you're sitting in an office and you get a ping and you can see, oh sweet, the frames just went up today, you know. They can show their coworkers, put it in their family group chats. Like, it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, 100%. And that's a big thing that I've noticed. Like, when you go on a journey with a client, you get all of their friends and family. Like, follow you and then follow on for that journey as well.
That's so cool, man.
Yeah, it's like, and then they're like, oh, geez, it's going up quick. And you're getting all these notifications and you're seeing the Instagram go and then the daily logs go.
Man.
So it's a good thing to put.
Then you get hits at the next barbecue. People are talking about you, eh? A few key things. You're a great talker, by the way. A few key things I do want to kind of talk about, though, is so like pricing stuff. Obviously, we're QSs and I love, like, I talk to heaps of business owners every day. And I just love to know how you're doing your pricing.
Yep.
Where have you made fuck ups in the past?
Yeah.
How did, give me a bit of a rundown on how you price.
And I'll probably put a disclaimer at the start of this to say we are using a QS at the moment, but it's not cool.
It's all
and
good.
I thought like that was why I wanted to come on here and just be like,
yeah, man,
the power that I've seen over the last 18 months with that has been huge. And if I could pass that on to one or two people to be like, make that jump, then and do it. So
it's a, I reckon it's a huge investment, eh?
Yeah, 100%. And and at the end of the day, with what most people are putting in place now and what we're putting in place, we're charging our clients from the start to do that quote.
Yeah.
So we're offsetting that cost straight away.
So it's not a cost to your business.
That's right.
So what's your back on the sales process, and can we mix in there? At what point do you get a, is it, do you call it a buyer's commitment fee or like a...
Yeah, how so do you, how does that work? Ours is called a preliminary agreement.
Yep, sweet.
So yeah, we'll send them a bit of a package, and it most likely typically includes structural drawings, a concept, a soil test, and then the estimation fee.
Yeah, sweet. What's that varying, 7.5 to 10K?
So we do it based on contract price of the job when comes out. So
percentage or
do 0.04%, which on $1 million build roughly works out to be about over $3,000.
Yep, sweet.
And then we're using an external company for that at the moment, and I didn't for a long time.
Yeah,
and I would get to the end of a job and be like, I felt like I was like hitting most of the prices, but then I wasn't making money, and I wasn't diving deep enough into it.
It's a tough one, man. The thing I've seen, and you'll be able to correct me on this, is you'll be like, cool, we made heaps on PNGs, burnt fucking hours on labor, made on materials, averaged on subbies.
Yeah.
But how do you, on every job, and I suppose you're always doing similar type of jobs, like you're in a niche industry, how do you just do 10% on each, you know, each area of the build?
Yeah, so now with the going down more the QS thing, and I'll come back to that question, but
that's cool.
I will say what I was kind of doing wrong, and the like the our proposals are like 50 to 60 pages now.
Yeah, it's pretty
in-depth. And there's thousands of, like, there's over 1,000 light items. So for an example, stuff that I wasn't quoting prior to it was things as simple as going to the site, putting up your notice of building work sign, scribbling your details on it, and then leaving. Like, I would, previously, I'd just be like, I'll go do that on a Saturday.
Yeah, nah, site sign and site setup.
Yeah, so it's like, you bill an hour for that.
Yeah, vehicle charge, site sign, like, you've got to charge for that shit.
Yeah, so, like, and I think that's where I was like, there was so many little things like that where I'd just be like, oh, I'll just do this one, and, it won't notice. But you do that, like, 50 times over the job, and that's, like, that's big money.
It's a lot of money, man.
And it's your time at the end of the day. It's not like you're unfairly charging for it. It's just purely stuff that you're putting into the job.
For sure.
So that's been the big benefit of actually having all of those things accounted for.
Yeah.
And the other one would be, like, having confidence in knowing that you've sent it off to a team of professionals.
Yeah, for sure.
And that it's getting done right. And because I think most builders' problems that will listen to this will be, you'll get a quote come in, but you'll be on site for 8 hours of the day, and then it's just like chaos at night trying to be like, oh, I've got to quickly pump this quote out.
Yeah, man.
And you miss things like really easily.
It's like, even if you're sitting down trying to do it, say you get a break, you do your site visits, you're home at 10, and you can be like, cool, I got 3 hours, and then you take a phone call from your builder, and you're like, I've just got a 20-minute job here, but I've muddled with all these other numbers and things, and then you forget to put something in, and it's like, oh, game over.
Purely like the time factor, and then being able to actually put enough time to make sure the numbers lie, I can say that most builders don't have the time to do that, and that's why they need to start outsourcing.
Yeah, for sure.
And then also just when you actually enter it and you're like, geez, I know this guy's accounted for all these little things like a site fence.
That I used to miss.
And that I used to miss. And then, straight away, we've been doing it for about just over 12 months now.
Cool, man.
And our jobs are running much more profitably than they were.
That's nice, man.
And then the trade-off as well, which is what I speak to clients about, is I say, if a builder's done his due diligence from the start and taken it to a QS, I feel like the client should have more confidence.
100%.
Because when they see a 50-page proposal come through and they go, most of it will mean absolutely nothing to them.
Yeah.
But just to show that like every item of that build is detailed through that process.
Yeah. So I've always said, if I was a homeowner and I see one builder send a 4-line item 0 quote versus 50, I'm kind of like, fuck, man.
And that's where builders sometimes get their bad names from is that they'll just pump like thousands of provisional sums in and then miss stuff and underquote stuff and then they've just got the leverage at the time to then go back and seek costs when they've kind of just underquoted it from the start. So
are you on all the projects you're doing now, are you predominantly fixed price only?
Fixed price only.
Yeah, like, that's good.
Yeah, we do have a portion of like provisional sums for like soil Absolutely. And things like that, where there's just things you can't determine whether you're going through that. But I think what we say our benefit is we're only kind of putting a provisional sum down for that one line item. Like it's not like a whole like lockup stage and it's all under provisional sum where they can hide costs or anything. So
what do you do in regards to like bathroom and kitchens where specs can range from, you know, huge sums?
Yeah.
Do you provide, like, do you go through a is that a part of your package of signing up? Like,
yeah, so
physically,
We'll always have a an inclusions list based on what, like, we usually put. Like, we're not sort of low range, we're not sort of super high end, we're kind of that mid to high end range.
Yeah.
So we'll give everyone a guide, and then based on when they start going into the selections, if they select it before we sign the contract, great, we'll lock it all in.
Cool.
But there's some people that it takes a little bit longer for them to understand exactly what they want. Okay. So we'll just make that allowance and then update that allowance from when they start to make those selections.
Rough figure, what's the most expensive kitchen you've put in and the most cheapest kitchen you've put in Canberra?
I think the cheapest kitchen we've put in will probably be like under 10K.
Shit, that's a rental, man.
Yeah. and the most expensive kitchen would be, pushing 100.
Nice. What about bathroom vanities? Seen some expensive stuff there?
Not too far. That's probably been one of the things that I've always suggested as a bit of a cost saver.
Yeah, fair.
Like,
I feel like they all look the same, man.
Yeah.
No offense to bathroom designers and shit.
And like, when we get into that state, like people go down the road of concrete ones and things like that.
Yeah.
But sometimes functionality at the end of the day, like the simpler ones are more functionable and they're cheaper on the cost. So
I feel like I wouldn't personally see the difference between a $700 wall hung and a $2,000. I'd just be like, as long as it's got a drawer and bench
top. With like how much price increases we've seen over the years, like they're definitely always the ones that I'm like, you can save $2,000 here,
man,
if you just pick a cheaper alternative, which isn't actually that much worse than the other one.
Standard size house you're doing, how many bathrooms, two-story, single-story, what's kind of happening in your market?
Standard size would probably be, I'd say, 250 internal living.
Yep, plus a garage.
Yeah.
Cool.
We've found the single-story nowadays is a lot more popular than double.
Yeah.
And I even think the real estate market reflects that. So we noticed that with our development, that there would be two-story houses in the same area that had similar traits and they would be trying to fetch higher price and they wouldn't sell. But whereas the single level ones that still have like decent rooms, higher ceilings and things like that, people are going for. So
they're snapping up. I suppose you just build to what the market wants.
With
for
kids,
your developments.
Kids and elderly people, like obviously that's the first thing that they look at. So I suppose it's just not trying to just really hone in on one section of the market, like it's been able to be open for a few.
Yep.
And I think there will be the time comes where then you want to go, all right, I'm going to try and attack that two-story pool and
go
all out. But
What's like a big sort of shortage of tradies in Canberra? What's the hardest subbies to get? Easiest ones, oversupplied? Is there anything that's very scarce? Bricklayers in NZ are hard to get.
Definitely the same. Bricklayers, I think joiners.
Joiners.
Is also
kitchen makers.
Cabinetry is a hard one. I still feel like there's a lot of people at the moment that were previously subbing the last 12 months that are looking at sort of going back on wages. So I do feel like there's a bit of a retract in actually just other subby, like with everything kind of out there.
Do you see a slight downturn of work in Canberra?
For sure. Yeah. We haven't noticed it too much, and I think I've definitely noticed it on the lead front, but I feel like with marketing and everything, that really, I'm so happy we did that back then because it really put us ahead into the future. And I think we've made subtle changes because the NCC, which is like the national code of, like who makes all the rules and regulations within Australia of what we work under, they've put out a series of changes which have upped the energy ratings. Changed like Australian standards and things like that of products that go in. So and it's all to basically be more sustainable.
Yeah, and energy efficient with insulation.
So we've started changing things like that with UPVC windows and building wraps, like the Proclima building wraps and things like that. So when we started to make those changes, I just generally wanted to do it because I wanted to give the client a house that performed
more value.
But I feel like that's actually attracted a lot of people as well.
Yeah.
So back to that question, I feel like we've been okay, but in terms of what I've noticed is 12 months ago, we used to spend thousands of dollars on ads to try and find carpenters and things like that, and we wouldn't get a hit. Whereas nowadays, probably the last 3 to 4 months, I've probably get a call every week to say, hey, I'm subbing at the moment, but I just want to get back to a more stable income and I want to go on wages. Like, do you have anything around?
Yeah, I see.
So,
Better flow of work. Guys are probably seeing chops and changes in work.
Yeah.
Did you find that a struggle? Have you ever had struggles with that? Like, that can be pretty tough, man. You said, you know, get a really good team of five on wages and gaps in your workflow.
That's
stressful, man.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest stresses I've had, because each time we've finished up a project, it doesn't always turn out perfectly when the next one starts.
And
just with how that process starts. So sometimes, yeah, we've gone, like, there was a period at the start of last year where we had three big jobs that were starting and they ended up all starting at once. But
that's niggly.
That February to May was like, we were doing the most random things you could imagine.
Busy,
like,
and
like, there was days where it would be like 7 o'clock at night and I wouldn't have the next day organized. So, and like, I'm grateful that it always ended up turning out.
Yeah.
But yeah, no one sees that sometimes when you're just like,
bro, I was going to say, like, a huge portion of our followers and that, you know, advice going out and doing your own thing. And it's like, people don't see.
Yeah.
Yeah. When is the next, they all just think, oh, they just cruise around and make a shitload of money.
Yeah.
But man, there's a fuckload of problems.
Yeah. 100%.
So many problems. So is that kind of why you've used extensions, renovations to kind of like maybe just fill in those gaps?
Yeah. Diversify a little bit. And that's probably, like almost recession proof a little bit as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I felt like I was very zoned in on one area. And now my partner's actually come on board. She had the commercial background and we're starting to do like commercial fit outs.
Yeah, that's good.
Insurance work and things like that. Just because having the carpenters on site for me working every day, like, I find even with four projects sometimes they'll be burned through the work and I'll still be like, okay, I've got to find them to do this on the side.
Yeah, man. Work, man, if you've got a good team, work can go, you can smoke through jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's one of my biggest challenges is just keeping them busy.
For sure.
And keeping them tick over.
On the pricing perspective, so you've been working with a QS for 12 months now. When you do, like, and this is more of a indication on sub trades, like, you would obviously have a rough idea of what your subbies are charging you, etc.
Yep.
You and your QS communicate these fees.
Yep.
Have you ever done cost estimates and then you've gone out to subbies and they're like, nah, our rates have gone up. They haven't told you you've submitted a fixed price.
Mm.
How do you deal with that shit?
Yeah, so obviously over the years, and we've kind of worked with a lot of the same trades for a lot of the time. So
it's beneficial.
Yeah, we've got a pretty good base set of rates that we work off. Obviously, when you get into the more bespoke stuff, it can change
rates
a little bit.
Rates go out the window, kind of.
But yeah, I suppose that communication with the start and giving all of that sort of information over to you or the QS at the start just helps basically limit room for error.
Yeah.
And then I think the other thing to mention as well is it's not like once, if you outsource it to a QS and then get it back, it's just like send it off to the client. Like, you need to still
do a lot
have
of work.
A detailed, like, look at everything and then still think of it, because the way you'll operate is probably slightly different to how they'll think it's going. And
well, every business is different. So it's like, really, a QS can only provide like kind of the blueprint or the majority of the grunt work.
Yeah.
But there's still so much that does go into it when you get a, you know, 400 or 500 line item sheet back. And I've always found if you can just, you know, go to your big key items, highlight all your labor hours, cool, 2,500 to 3,500 hours. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Happy with that. But then, like you said, you've got a back costing software.
Yeah.
You can go back and actually check.
But I think the other thing is, as well, is when I've found it, and it's always sometimes unders and sometimes it's overs. And like, not huge amounts, but I feel like once you've got the report back, you've got a budget to work with. So if your usual contractor is $2,000 more for the plumbing.
Yeah.
Maybe it's worthwhile going to source another few quotes, but
yeah, for sure.
And that's where you can always, you know what I mean, use that, because it's not always going to be perfect. But
you go to guys and like, so for example, do you have like a rough fee of what you allow for joinery, like 2,500 a unit or 2.2?
Yeah.
And then if you get a quote come over, you're just like, hey, I'm pretty firm on my budget here. Can you do these units for 40k?
Yeah. Or we go back to the client and we pair back like selections wise and things like that. So we'll always let them know if they haven't selected anything, what the budget is for that.
Yeah.
And then it's like, once we get to that stage and it doesn't work, once they've sort of designed their dream kitchen, then we'll go back to that.
Sweet. No, that makes sense.
But a huge, what I'll add to that as well is, what the QS has been doing it for us as well is biller quantities.
Yeah.
And that's been like massively, like I would say the biller quantities is worth paying the fee just alone.
Yeah.
So built what I mean by biller quantities is like every piece of material, like whether it's, if you do a cut frame and
doing
a timber takeoff, you've got James Hardy V-groove or whatever,
you can get your total square meters for plaster and paint, doors,
And you can just send that straight onto the suppliers. Because most suppliers will do takeoffs for free if you're buying products from them, but you're waiting sometimes 2 weeks
and
sometimes
long,
longer and it's too long. But if you can just send them and go, hey, this is what I need, they can get you back a price that same day and you go, bang, order it. Or we need this on the 10th of June or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you can program all of that in at the start, like building gets so much easier because you can actually just focus on actually running the job
and
making sure everything's working on site. So
that's
the power that I've seen, both confidence with clients and everything with that. And then,
I think, 100%, I'm on the same page as you. And I think from a project, like if you were doing smaller, let's say smaller jobs like 50,000, and let's say you're more of like the project management style business, it's very easy to go, cool, I've got a 40K or a $5,000 labor budget here.
Mm.
Let's go and sub out a fixed price for $4,000.
Yep.
Materials, boom, 15%. You can see your margins.
Yeah.
I think it's easier.
Yeah.
What's your average charge out rates in Canberra? Like what do you price at on a, for a tradie perspective?
Yeah, so we're roughly around $100 an hour for tradesmen.
Yep.
And about $65, $70 for an apprentice.
Okay, so when you break out your labor, do you do, say, if you're doing a day of frames, will you put 9 hours at 110, 9 hours at 60?
Yep.
Or do you just do sort of 18 hours at 110?
I'll add whoever's on it, like so apprentice versus tradie, and then and then just how many hours they're on that for the day.
Okay, some guys get real confused because on jobs we'll go, you know, tradesperson one, apprentice one, and put two rates, but then some for additional margin and contingency we'll just do sweet 1 hour rate, well 18 hours at whatever, 110 and 60, so 160.
Yeah, that's additional how margin. I was doing it before as well, which I sort of got taught from another builder, which I actually think it's quite a good way, but I've kind of just been going with the way that the QS does, which he does hours. But we always used to do rates. So for a cut frame, say you do $25 per square meter for that cut frame.
I see, yeah.
And that, so even though that I've got the employees, one, I can make money on them doing the job.
Yeah.
But if we're super busy and I can't get to the guys, I can get another crew in of subbies.
Contractor, yes.
And actually have enough in my allowance to do that.
Yeah.
So I think that's also a good way as well. If you're doing it on the meter rate, actually doing the market value of what that rate is, rather than just, obviously I can do it for a lot cheaper than that, but if you need to get a subby and if you're super busy, then you're covered and you're not going to lose money on it.
Yeah. How many times a year would you call in a crew of subbies? And are there many of them floating around in Canberra? Maybe not as much now.
Yeah. We've actually not had to use too many. Just with carpentry. Like, obviously, we've got a huge subby base for every other trade.
Subbies.
I've always, and that's people are going, oh, I'm a subby, can I get some work off you? And I'm like, only if you come on wages with me. So
yeah, good way to negotiate it down.
I always prefer to have them sort of under my banner.
For sure, man. And I feel like there's more, they'll take pride in their work. They don't really care if they make a fuck up. They're not just going to fuck off at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it helps your brand as well.
Yeah.
You've got a good team now, but before you did, was it tough finding a good crew of five? Like, are there, and have you trained them up from the start, or how have you done it?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much all of them from the very start.
Nice.
And that's one sort of thing that I've always had in the back of my head is to play the long game.
Yeah, man.
And as hard as it was sometimes having sort of more apprentices than... is probably normal, and having a few other tradies or whatever, like tradies will cost you more at the time, but I feel like I'm very OCD with the way I like things done, and like I've tried to let go of control a little bit with some things, but when I feel like I train people up the way that I've learnt, and I feel like that way is kind of bulletproof. Obviously there's tweaks and that I let the guys do, what they pick up from other people and same thing, but there's like a base way that I've always like just showing them from the ground up,
man.
And showing them everything and not hiding them from stuff, then that I feel like now is really starting to pay off.
Yeah.
But that's taken like 4 or 5 years
that stage. It's a long-term investment, eh?
Yeah.
Councils in Canberra, easy to work with, tough? Turnaround times on plans?
Turnaround times is depending on what you go through. So
for sure.
Building approval, if you build within the requirements, you don't have to go through development approval.
Okay.
So you can, that roughly, you can do a knockdown rebuild and you can build it within the guidelines and you can be on the ground running within sort of 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay, yeah, it's pretty good.
If you go and push your envelope a little bit, then you go through the development application, or if you're sort of subdividing the block or something
that, doing a bit more work,
6 to 9 months wait.
Okay, cool. So your average time frame between, say, signing someone up for the prelim costings, the day they do that, what's a rough time frame to get?
I reckon a year.
A year?
Yep.
Yeah. That's probably fair, right?
Yeah, it's slow and like, and that's, yeah. And then sometimes like that process is even longer. So when that sort of prospective client first comes into your database and pipeline and whatnot, like sometimes I'm working on that for a further 12 months before that, and
before just they sign,
checking in with them and whatever else, just because I've realized that when someone reaches out to you, they're not always ready to go straight away. They're just sort of going, oh, I'm thinking touching about doing this. We just want a rough idea of what this is going to cost, and it's super important to nurture like that client through that phase.
Yeah, that's a long time, eh? Like a year to nurture someone, a year for plans. It's like, man, you've got to be planning your pipeline 2 years out. That's,
yeah.
I suppose that insurance work and the other work would be handy to get, eh?
Yeah, 100%.
Yep, absolutely. Do you notice a big difference? Is it harder to get sort of higher-end builders? Obviously, you've trained your guys as per, but...
Yep.
I feel like there's so much difference between a general, you know, a commercial carpenter, a high-end builder, a general builder. Like, how do you differentiate that? And what kind of work is in Canberra for those kind of guys?
Yeah, so we've actually had, like, with the team we've got at the moment, they've been rock solid for the last few years, but we've had a lot of guys sort of come and go. And same thing with clients, like I was saying earlier, like they're not always the right fit for you.
Yeah.
And I feel like we've had a lot of our success from honestly just like doing the right thing and not always being so conscious about the price tag, like just making sure the quality's there.
Premium product.
Yeah, you got a premium product. And I think like with anything, money will follow that over time.
For sure.
But you need to get those like staples right from the very start.
Yeah.
So we've had plenty of people come through and like they're just like, I get good feedback from the guys on site now that I'm off the tools and just saying like, he's trying to change some ways we're doing things and cut corners and like, it doesn't always work sometimes with those guys, which is hard, but if you can point them in the right direction to maybe someone else who can
give them a bit
of work or anything like that until they're ready for that sort of stage. But that's been our biggest one, just sort of driving that quality.
Sweet.
And then everything flows from that.
What's your sort of direction for how you want to take the business in the next 4 to 5 years? From a client build and a development build.
Yeah, so I just want to, the biggest thing would be being a bit more of like a household name. So the root kind of goal that I have is when someone's like, I want to do a knockdown rebuild, like Freedom Built will be the first thing that sparks their mind.
Yeah.
And then like, I just want to set those expectations high. So, and I feel like we're getting there a little bit with the guys on site when people ask us for work or anything that, they're like, you won't pull the wool over his eyes. you won't let anything buy him. So, and I feel like that is just down to those core values of getting the quality right and everything like that. So
what's the average house demo cost in Canberra, roughly?
30K?
Yeah. And is that how much consenting and application work is there to do a house demo? Is there much or?
Yeah, same sort of thing. Yeah. It's more or less those building approval timeframes.
Yeah,
so
there's
a few forms you just have to submit with the government, it's roughly that sort of four weeks.
Yeah, that's not too bad, for that.
Yeah, longer sort of term goals is, I'm really happy with like the workflow and everything that we've got on at the moment. Like we're with the power of marketing and finding the right clients for us. Yeah. Like we've got like awesome clients at the moment and over the next part of this year. So we're super keen just to like pump out really, really good jobs for these guys. Man. Which makes it easy, and then just refine the process.
Yeah.
Just get better at the day-to-day, find more time for my family. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Maddie and I are getting married in September, so
congrats,
that's
man.
a long-term nice. Goal of like both of ours. So, yeah, just being able to get the business into a position to be able to switch off for that and just completely let go and enjoy that, and then hopefully also get on... like a honeymoon at the end of the year as well.
Good man, bro. do you see anyone in your team that you could promote to kind of...
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, which I do now as well. Yeah, and that's what I've noticed. like Joey, he's actually one of the younger guys, but yeah, he's just
motivated as,
and he understands, like, we understand each other very well now, and I feel like sometimes I'll be telling him to do something and he'll finish my sentence.
He'll
be like, yeah, I know.
Go get back in the office, mate. I'm all over it.
Yeah, so having good, people like that you can rely on, like, is massive. And I suppose the other part of one of the goals for 2024 is I felt very stuck into the business sometimes. So being able to put more people in place and get back. It's just like simple things, like when you want to have a sick day, and you don't want your phone to call 50 times.
Yeah, but it does anyway, and who's going to take that? Are you strict on your time? Like, do you do a bit of a time audit and be like...
Yeah, like, I am now. Like, yeah. I have to be, because you need to be in so many places at once.
Yeah,
and
man.
Things like that. And it's even like when I'm in the office with Maddie and she's sitting on the other side of the table to me.
Yeah.
And then I'll have to even zone like questions for her time frames. And it's like, not like you're being rude or anything, but it's like... If your phone rings, or like you just get questions, and like I'm the type of person where I'm in there and I'm just like, you just completely lose track of thought. And there's some days that I used to get at the end of the day and I'd be like, what did I even do today?
Did I even do anything? Yeah. Oh man, I'm a do not disturb guy now. I'm like 10 till 12. Yeah. I've got 6 things here. No one can call me.
So I think you have to be a little bit selfish with your time and prioritize it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just come unstuck. And
you lose the days. Yeah. You lose the days.
And I think it's important for guys at the start, like me, that you don't have 5-6 other people in the office where you can delegate all this stuff to. Like you're wearing so many hats, so you need to be like super conscious of your all time over, and where you're putting it into.
Absolutely. For guys sort of thinking that building owners just make heaps of money and do stuff, what would be some like things you would tell them, or like things to be aware of, or before they're going out on their own, bit of advice?
Yeah, so one, like honestly, first thing I'd do is if I priced any job, it would be through a QS.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, you're still only, like when guys are coming from being a carpenter into that space, you still don't have a huge amount of experience in buying products and setting up the right trades and things like that. So, having that cost dialed in from the very start, and even making sure project management and supervision is on that, because I swear that's something that I didn't even think of pricing prior to doing it. So that would be a huge one. I think is finding a good base of like contractors and people who are going to work within you. And I think at the start, sometimes that works with a lot of your mates.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
But then going into that further, I wouldn't always be, don't be like obligated to use your mate sometimes, like, and
don't want to ruin a friendship, man.
Yeah, like when you start to reach out to people for prices and things like that, like sometimes it feels so hard just to reach out to one person.
Yeah,
but then when you gain the confidence to be able to reach out to 3 people, and then you realize this guy's been charging me this the whole time.
Yeah,
I've just got 2 other quotes, and I can make $10,000 more.
Yeah,
by just making a phone call.
Another phone call, reach out to 1 new contractor.
So like that would be another bit of advice. And then the last bit of advice I'd do is just actually like personal development.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of work on that recently, both like personally with just learning how to like regulate like cortisol and be so wound up all the time and like
stress management, bro.
Yeah.
It's huge.
That's a big one. And also like I said a bit earlier, like business coaching.
Yeah.
By far, like that's the best money that I've spent
on
either putting you in a network with other people where you can relate to, because sometimes it feels very lonely.
Yeah. Who do you talk about your problems to?
Yeah.
Who else has gone through it? Yeah.
I'm in quite a few different things now where like we catch up every 3 months with a group of builders from all around Australia, and like we talk through our problems and things
That's
like
cool,
that.
Eh?
So that was, once I was able to reach out and say, you're not in this alone, people are going through similar situations.
Yeah.
And if you have a little bit of money to like put into your progression, like you will not, like you'll never see it as a cost to your business.
Yeah, it's an ROI.
You'll go from here to here sort of thing. Yeah.
And what do you do outside of work? What's your and your partner's sort of, what do you guys do? Do you get on holidays much? Do you go camping?
So we actually just bought a camper at the back half of last year. So
big RV lifestyle. Sick.
We, and to be honest, prior to that, I'd never camped in my life before. And like, I'm the type of person where I'm like, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And it was
fucking
like,
all in.
All right. Go buy a caravan, get everything set up, and then everyone's like, don't you just want to like go hire one, maybe see if you like it? And I was like, no, let's go.
No, buy it, man. I'll sell it if I hate it.
Loved it.
Nice.
I've done a bit of traveling previously, like
cool.
all around the world. Nice. I actually noticed you've done a fair bit as well. So
try to, bro. I really want to stack it in yeah. as much as I can while I can. So yeah. yeah.
So yeah, that's a big passion of ours, and
nice.
Hopefully we can get somewhere good.
Good stuff, man.
Like on the slopes, maybe in Canada for our honeymoon or
bougie
something like that, and then. Yep. Other than that, just yeah, spend time with family.
Nice, bro.
Play a bit of golf here and there.
Nice, man.
And
good yeah. stuff. Cool, bro. I think we're about done there. Thank you very much. Appreciate yep. it. Shot for coming in.
Thank you, sir.
Legend, man. Awesome.
Oh, wow.
You're a good talker, bro. I tell you what, that was easy, eh?
Yeah. That was good flowing. First one as well.
Have you done what made you so keen, if you don't mind me asking?
I one of my goals this year, and like I was saying previously, I'm getting coaching from another builder in Melbourne. And
nice.
We do this like immersion every couple of months we go away. And yeah, we're just cool. about to do, like we have a theme for each one, whether it's like systems,
yeah, nice.
Vitality was the last one, like actually yep. like check in with your own self and